In certain areas of the world in particular, slavery really hasn't ever ended, has it? This is a continuum of slavery, really, plain and simple.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This can be termed as modern-day slavery. Maybe it has a different style, maybe it's perpetrated in a slightly different way, but it is slavery, pure and simple. And with the way that we're all able to move today, it becomes easier to move people. I think it has been so difficult raising the awareness of the issue that it really set us back in terms of developing legislation and ways to help victims to reintegrate into society.
What have been some of the reasons why this issue has been so invisible or something that we had reluctance to look at?
Yeah, I think there are a few reasons for that. So let's dial way back to what the push factors are. How do people land in human trafficking to begin with? And it's vulnerabilities. And there are numerous vulnerabilities that thread through societies. If we look at the United States, two primary ones are poverty and domestic violence, issues that we work on right here in Five Points, issues that we work on in a rural area through agriculture. And then if you look more broadly and roll it out globally, we have the transition of people, we have war, we have refugees, we have immigrants. These are all levels of vulnerabilities that open that window to be trafficked. There was a saying when I was working in Russia, also working on human trafficking there, just to end it there as well, and they would say, well, people are pulled in to becoming trafficked because they have pink dreams. So it's that bubble effect. It's pretty. It sounds good. It might be better on the other side. I might really be a model. I might really be a housekeeper. I might really find a way to earn money. So if we go backwards, we're still coming back to that poverty piece where people are looking for a better life, but not always well informed about the entrapments that can occur.
So that's how younger people possibly, but any age and either sex, could be vulnerable to somebody who's exploiting them. What about way down the line, the customers, if you will, the people who are pushing the industry to make it economically attractive for somebody to get into this business in the first place? And I imagine there's a lot of people in between.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the traffickers themselves. So if you look at drugs, they can be sold once. So if you look at drugs, guns, or other types of material type things, you turn them once. Human beings are turned on an average of 7 times. You have now opened up this whole wide cash flow for an underground system that replenishes itself. And then if you dial it down to the very worst of the worst with traffickers, when a victim can no longer perform, whether it's labor or whether it's sex or whatever the case may be, then they can be murdered and their organs can be sold. And that is another chain. So there are all of these evil pieces that are embedded into trafficking itself. And we have to address each one of those pieces individually and holistically. And that's what we expect the law to do. So we need to be very, very firm on the laws that we establish, not just running them through legislature and say, okay, governor signed on that, it's law, fine. We have to implement it. So we as activists have to stay vigilant and understand that that is being implemented in the way that the law was intended.
Many countries have come together under the United Nations Sustainable Goals, or Global Goals, as they're affectionately called. What coordinated efforts do we have in place right now?
Many of these countries are graded by the United States Department of State, and we have what's called the TIP report, the Trafficking in Persons report. And that's an important driver of how countries are coming around this issue, because they're actually graded. And then, secondary to that, here in the United States, we have an organization called Shared Hope International, and they grade all the states on legislation. So are you an ABC or D state? And that gives each state a chance to look at what's in place and then say to themselves, do we need to augment it? If so, how? Is it on prosecution? Is it on social services? What are the legislative pieces that need to be in place to both stop human trafficking, prosecute human trafficking, but also help people reintegrate into society as a whole without stigma?
Has it been difficult to coordinate enforcement efforts between states and between countries?
There's always a level of ownership, but sometimes partnerships come together in amazing ways. I'll give an example from Eastern Europe. So I wrote the program called the Moldova Initiative to End Human Trafficking. And we came together, anybody working in the space to end human trafficking, and we created a gigantic database so that everybody knew what everybody else was doing. And we knew what level each of those people were working on. It was a phenomenal effort, one, collecting all the information, and two, making it go forward year after year. So we housed it with a group called OSCE, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. And they still have a lead role to end human trafficking in Europe, not just Eastern Europe, but in all of Europe. So those kinds of partnerships are extraordinarily valuable. And I think you have to find the tipping points of where you can enter that space so that people trust you. So there's that level of trust building before you can actually say, let's do X. You need to first know what everyone else is doing.
So let's talk about on a global basis, where are some of the worst cases and what are some of the channels of distribution, if you will?
There are approximately 21 million trafficked around the world. That 21 million, and here's a really scary part of the equation, generate $32 billion in estimated profits. And of that, there are 29 countries that have not joined what we call the Palermo Protocol. So they don't care about the tip report. They don't care about their legislation. They're just ignoring all of it. I'll give you an example again. I'll take you back to Eastern Europe. There's a tiny little country sandwiched between Moldova and Ukraine. It's called Transnistria. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
No, the world hasn't heard of it. It's a rogue state, and it's run by the Russian mafia. So if they get a human being from Romania, Moldova, or Ukraine into Transnistria, they can export that person anywhere in the world. They have planes. They have no governing rules. They have no legislation to make it stop. So the rogue states are very, very dangerous because it opens up an avenue, a chain to move the people.
And then these funds are used to support the rogue state itself, if you will?
Sure. Support the rogue state, support their lifestyle. So, I mean, it's greed, you know, it's just evil greed.
So take us down the chain from we've met those who might be vulnerable due to poverty or other issues, exploited by somebody who knows obviously how to attract them into dreams of something better, certainly misrepresenting what's going on. What typically happens then?
It depends on how sophisticated the actual network is. And trafficking happens at every level. So if you bring it home and you take it to Grand County, we had an undersheriff that prostituted young high school girls. But he's a trafficker because he lured them, he entrapped them, and he moved them from Grand County down to an area near Longmont where he was actually busted in a sting. So, you know, that brings it down to the local level. But then in your mind, you can scale that up and go all the way to Transnistria that I just mentioned and imagine how big their networks are. Because now they have mobility, they have their own planes, they have their own marketing to entrap people. And that could be children or women or men. It could be for sex, it could be for agriculture. I mean, it can be so many ways. But when a person is entrapped and their identity papers are taken, that's trafficking. Because if you don't have free will, you now can't move to a safe place. You are under the hold of that trafficker.
And I assume that moving people around makes them just that much more vulnerable and able to be controlled.
And hard to find, because now we don't have their papers, we don't have their entry across borders, we don't have their entry into other countries through passport control. You know, so those documentation pieces are now missing and very hard to find. And you know, as we talk about vulnerabilities, I wanted to bring up a couple points about children, because this is just so horrifying when you think about someone in our care to suddenly land as a child being trafficked. And there are millions of children today that are being trafficked. They're trafficked for prostitution, pornography, sex tourism, forced marriage, sweatshop work, begging, even armed forces, let's look over at the Congo, and migrant farming. So those are just places where children shouldn't be exploited in any kind of way.
And I see that you've got something about 5.5 million children are trafficked at any one time?
That's the estimate today. And these are all UN figures that I'm citing today.
And tell me what areas they come from, typically.
Oh, everywhere. So the largest area for movement of human trafficking in general, Central and Southeastern Europe, and then I just gave the examples from Moldova, which is in Eastern Europe, and the CIS, the Central, former Soviet Union states. Africa is next, followed by Middle East, then Asia and the Pacific, then Latin America and the Caribbean, and then still there are the developed countries and the developed economies. They play a role too.
There were trafficked individuals that were being held outside of Longmont. Who are the customers?
Well, in this particular sting, it was primarily men.
Paint us a picture, or is this just absolutely anybody?
It truly is anybody. And in that particular case, I don't remember who the users. And it's a little bit frightening, the role that social media plays in all of this today, because the user can contact the trafficker through social media and set up a location. And that's very scary.
Do you feel that we don't care to prosecute the customer, or is it just that difficult that it's very hard during a sting operation or something to go after the people who are really giving the financial incentive for this industry to continue?
I think we have the laws to prosecute.
Federal efforts have only been underway 17 years. Colorado has focused on human trafficking in the last 12. Reporting has increased, including the use of hotlines by survivors themselves. We're one of the first states to have a governor's council on human trafficking. To be clear, most traffickers in Colorado are U.S. citizens. Colorado Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman pushed for a new human trafficking law that allows law enforcement to use wiretaps in sex and labor trafficking investigations where children especially are either unwilling or unable to come forward. It passed in September. She and other attorney generals recently also sent a letter to Congress, U.S. Congress, urging it to amend a law that allows online ads by human traffickers. Other laws passed this year require anyone convicted of child sex trafficking to serve a minimum of 8 years in prison and expanded the definition to include people who facilitate the crime by providing transportation or housing. I continue my conversation with Dr. Susan Jaber. In Colorado, I know that we're told that this area around Denver is vulnerable because we're at the crossroads of I-25 and 70. Is that typically the case in the United States, that it's at crossroads where more populations are, let's say, vulnerable because of the ability to move them around?
Yeah, I think transportation plays a big role, especially in moving from state to state. And it's much harder to move them by air today. We have some wonderful examples of flight attendants coming together as activists and being trained so that they understand what the signs of human trafficking are. And also, I want to rest on truckers for just a minute. They are one of the strongest advocacy groups that have emerged in the last decade or so. And there are a number of groups that are national now, and I applaud their efforts. We need to look at the activists and what activists are trying to do in this social justice space, as well as looking at the perpetrators.
I know that we have a Colorado Network to End Human Trafficking hotline.
Yes.
We can't say this enough, so it's 1-866-455-5075. Now, that's for anybody who suspects that they've seen traffickers or they have any information at all, right?
That is correct. Yes.
So this is also for victims that could call themselves, or someone could call on their behalf, possibly?
Yes. Yes. And what we try to do in other programs is to lay out signs for people to look toward.
Warning signs of human trafficking, for example, if somebody wants to take or keep your documents, if somebody makes you pay to get a job, if someone's pressuring you to work for them. If there's no details in writing and promises are made of large amounts of money, and if somebody is pressuring you to sign a contract in a language you don't understand, signs that you may be vulnerable and at risk. Might we muse a little bit about why we have this problem? Granted, the internet has made communication in private ways possible, which is not always helpful. How is it that there are so many customers? I guess I still go back to the customers. Why are there so many people willing to pay to have sex, for example, with people who clearly are either underage, under physical distress, psychological distress? These signs have to be apparent to some extent. It's not healthy human sexuality. It's anonymous and impersonal, and it's not about relationships. And yet there's demand for this. Any thoughts while you're working on this subject?
It's a horrible puzzle. And if I really could answer that fundamental question of why, I think I could end human trafficking today. We can also look at it from the perspective of power, because it's not always about social media. It's not always about the violation and entrapment of using social media, but it's also about power. So if you look at any of these countries that I just described, oftentimes the person that traffics the vulnerable person is at some level of power. It could be a parent who sold a child simply because they needed to put money on the table for other children. So in that case, it's probably going to be the girl being sold so that they can feed the boys. It could be a mayor of a city who has the trust of everybody in a city and has figured out that there's an income stream that he can create by, you know, perpetrating this crime on people. So it always comes down to that empower and power positions. Who has power and who doesn't have power? And when you don't have awareness, when you're so naive and you have no clue that this could possibly exist, of course you're going to trust the parent or the mayor or whoever has the power in your community. We know that since 2007, there have been over 2,000 calls to report human trafficking. So that's just too many for Colorado. Human trafficking is happening right under our noses. Yeah. It's incredible. So it's set in the late 1700s and early 1800s in Britain when one man was leading the charge to end slavery. And his name was Wilberforce. And sometimes I look at his name and I think it must have been made up. But in fact, it wasn't. He was a parliamentarian and he was really fighting hard to end slavery during that period. You can imagine the obstacles that he was against. And I think about human trafficking in those terms today too. The obstacles are phenomenal because they're global. But Wilber said, "You may choose to look the other way, but you can never say again that you did not know." So the more we talk about human trafficking, the more we put a spotlight on it, then individuals like you and me can never say we did not know. And we can find ways to do something right and good.
So you would encourage us all to keep our eyes open,
yes,
know the signs, and if you have any questions or any doubts, to voice them on the hotline.
On the hotline, and also if you can have a conversation with someone that you suspect that's at risk, even if it's just very quiet, even if it's just in the ladies' room, see if you can suss out just the tiniest bit of information and then call it in.